We're talking with Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman about Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels, their book that gets into Men in Black, all kinds of critters and entities that may or may not be related to demonic presences. And when we come back, we'll continue that conversation, then open up the phone lines with your questions, calls, and comments. Stick around, more Coast to Coast AM to come. Larry Flaxman, before the break, we were talking about the idea of Men in Black, and I had to interrupt your answer to that about whether or not it's demonic or just a modern creation. Please continue.
So, and again, this is purely my personal opinion, but, you know, I'm not so sure that I believe in the whole concept of Men in Black and kind of the personification of that. As I was saying, that idea really has sprung about since the late 40s, I think 1947 or 48, after the alleged crash at Roswell. There was a gentleman by the name of Harold Dahl, I think was his name. He was lecturing about UFO stuff, and he was Agent Zero or Patient Zero for the Men in Black. Now, keep in mind, there have been, for thousands of years, we've had these experiences where people have had alleged contact with extraterrestrials. So it boggles my mind that we've only now started to see the Men in Black within the last, 100 years at the most. Very surprising to me. The idea of the Men in Black also kind of closely follows kind of some concepts about Lucifer as well. So there have been folks that believe that Lucifer has paid them a visit in very similar dress attire and mannerism, kind of human, but not possibly some sort of weird hybrid type creature, doesn't really have any type of inflection to his voice, doesn't really have mannerisms that are typical of a human. So it's a concept that while the idea is certainly not lost on me, I have to kind of draw the line a little bit. And again, that is my own opinion, but I don't know that I necessarily believe that, but I know certainly people believe that they've had those experiences, but I don't know.
I want to touch on one other topic before we go to the phones, and they're filling up pretty fast, but it's about witchcraft. Marie, earlier I had asked whether Lilith being portrayed as the queen of the demons had been propaganda, and I meant it sort of in this context, the same way that witches became sort of demonized and evil, because when the church came in, it had to stomp out the old beliefs.
Oh, absolutely. Paganism in any way, shape, or form, especially goddess traditions, were the first to be stomped out, hijacked, altered, changed, borrowed from. And women's sexuality, female sexuality, presented such a threat to the Catholic Church that their idea of dealing with women who menstruated, who became pregnant, and who could create life and have babies and tempted men was to demonize them and then torture and kill them or burn them or harass them. So absolutely, it was, and I think this goes on today in a different form, obviously, but witches, pagans, and these women weren't necessarily witches. They were just women. And in many cases, they were women that were using herbs, and they were women that, were gorgeous and very sexual, and they were very tempting to men. So instead of punishing the men who were being tempted, obviously that punishment was turned towards women. That's one of the blackest marks on our history with the Inquisitions, the witch trials and the burning of heretics. It just all sort of is grouped together as a time when the church was imposing its beliefs and its concepts and ideologies upon everybody that they could come in contact with. And if those people didn't willingly go along, then they were tortured or killed.
A lot of people on the phones. Let's take a couple of calls. I've got a lot more that I'd like to cover, but we'll see what's on the minds of our listeners. First-time caller, Naomi in Anaheim. Hey, Naomi, you're on Coast to Coast.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you taking my call. I just have a question for the authors and what they believe in is the nature or what gives these, the devil or the demons their nature as far as the relationship to us as humans. And, you know, what makes us vulnerable to them as far as, like, you know, people who are depressed or dealing with addiction and how they can attack us or affect us, you know, within our dimension and dealing with these spirits or entities.
I'm assuming you want our personal beliefs. I'll go first, and then Larry. Personally, to me, and even after writing this book, and especially after writing this book, and I know a lot of people are going to argue with me, but again, this is my personal opinion, is that these demons, the devil, Satan, they're all representations of anything that we see as being negative, destructive, whether it's external to us or internal. My feeling is when it comes to things like addiction and depression, those are internal demons, and I mean that very literally, that we need to face, that we need to address. They're not demons in the way that we're talking about in this book. They are more behavioral demons that we need to sort of overcome. In terms of evil in the world, I can point to a zillion examples of human-driven evil in the world. I myself have never experienced anything that I would say was not of human origin, but that's just me. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who claim to have been, have dealt with demonic possession. So, Larry, if you want to chime in on that one.
No, I agree 100%. And, you know, I've been involved in paranormal investigation for 25 plus years now. And, you know, I've personally never had any of those experiences. I have close friends that claim to have had cases referred to them, for instance, of folks that have had some type of demonic involvement. But I've never personally had any type of connection with that. Honestly, I'm not so sure that I believe it. I think the human mind is incredibly powerful, and we have the ability to kind of create reality based on our thoughts. And, you know, if someone is going through some challenges in their life, if someone has any type of any mental disorder or disease, you know, I think the ability to create that reality, or at least that perception of that reality, exists within each and every one of us. I've had some incredibly vivid and crazy dreams that, you know, when I woke up, I'm like, oh my God, was that real? But does that mean that it really was real? Well, does it? I mean, yes, maybe, maybe not. Was it just because I was dreaming and had a crazy dream? You know, and I'm not trying to minimize by any means some of the people's experiences that they've had. But, you know, to me, the idea of possession and the idea of physicality of these creatures really is a little far-fetched. You know, I think that human imagination can take you so far, and then, you know, once you get to that point, you know, you're really, it's very, it becomes almost a literal thing. Again, are you creating that reality, or is it really something that exists? You know, I don't want to say you're making it up and, you know, you're faking, but, you know, fake it till you make it, maybe. I don't know. But I agree with Marie 100%. And, you know, I would say for anyone that is having those types of experiences, that believes that they have some type of demonic possession or some type of bad juju following them around like that, then I would certainly urge them to solicit some type of help, whether it's mental, whether it's from the clergy, whatever your particular line of belief is. You know, I would certainly say, like anything else, get some help.
I should mention you have a section in the book about exorcisms and wrote something about, I think it was the last pope that authorized a whole bunch of different exorcists to be approved by the church?
Oh
Right.
boy, I mean, they're just, yeah, this exorcism has made a huge comeback. And what I find really interesting, and I know Larry and I have talked about this, is what does pop culture have to do with this? Is it because there are so many more people that are having terrible challenges and maybe mental illness, because we know mental illness is skyrocketing and they're misinterpreting it as demonic possession, children that have temper tantrums, what have you, people, including autistic children. I've heard of that before. Is it the proliferation of movies and TV shows and novels about devils and demons and possessed people and possessed dolls and haunted houses that are be it's becoming a part of the mindset of this, current era that we think that there is more demonic activity going on, and thus the church is responding that way? I don't know, because what's also interesting is that the Roman Catholic population, in terms of people who follow Roman Catholicism, is falling every year. And yet, here is the Catholic Church increasing the amount of exorcisms that they're ordering and training their priests and their clergy who have never been trained before in exorcisms.
West of the Rockies, Carlos in Hawaii. Hey, Carlos, good morning.
Good evening, George. Earlier, it was mentioned that in Judaism there's concept of evil. Yes, there is. It comes from the concept of Haman, and it's the holiday of Purim. And in Judaism, it's required to have two Torahs, really, because there's another holiday which is called Simchat Torah, where we finish the end of the fifth book of Moses and then go back to the very, very beginning of Genesis. And within the last week, two Torahs were stolen from a synagogue here in Hawaii, in Honolulu. Now, I consider that a heinous crime, and the people who did it are very much satanic. But what I wanted to talk about was the origins of Satanism. When I was a kid, there was no Satan in Judaism. But within the last month or 5 weeks, the present Pope, came out with a statement that Satan exists today on the earth in human form, and if you know him, steer clear of him, avoid him, don't associate with him, don't speak with him, don't have words with him. To me, this is the satanic movement, which was created by Anton LaVey, writing the Satanic Bible, and the creation of the Church of Satan, both of which occurred in the United States, emanated from the United States. But Anton LaVey, which was just a pen name, it was really Jeff Blair, Jeff the Thief. He did it as Bill Coslow. These people have so many different names and identities, and they can metamorphosize from one identity to the other. And some of their identities, there's two or more people that share the same identity. And they fake their death, they terminate an identity, and just metamorphosize into their other personas' identities. But this whole schism of power, it's now in the United
Hey,
States.
Carlos, I'm going to ask you to get to a question here because a lot of people are hanging on the lines. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, my question is it possible that going back to the 1950s and the 1960s, Satan did not really exist, but that today he does because he was created by people who live on the planet Earth who are alive and well today?
It's a really that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Let me go first, Marie, then
Okay, go
then
ahead.
your take. So here is my idea on that. So based on our research, there for hundreds, if not thousands of years, there have been the idea of demon or the devil and demons and but only within the last 100+ years, when there's been a proliferation of communication methods, I think is when the popularity has really taken off. With the internet, over the last 40 or so years. Then prior to that, you had a little more primitive technology for communication. But as we've progressed as a culture technologically, and we've been able to communicate concepts and ideas and beliefs more readily and easily, it's become much easier to persuade people and to affect change based on your belief. So, you know, that's my personal opinion. I think that because of the ability to communicate faster and quicker and more efficiently, that you're hearing more about these things over the last century versus prior to that. But I think they've always been there. We just didn't have the awareness of it that we do today.
Yeah, and I think, too, when the Pope talks about Satan being alive on Earth, I don't necessarily think he's talking about one individual. I think it's, again, it's a symbolic representation of evil.
Yeah.
And what he's saying is evil exists. Try, you know, don't be tempted by it. Avoid it. Satan exists in many forms to the Pope, to the Catholic Church, and that can come in, you know, committing crimes and raping and murdering and anything that is associated with the Roman Catholic concept of evil and of Satan. And so when the Pope talks about Satan walking among man, what he's really saying is that evil is, you know, the guy that lives next door to you could be evil. Your mother-in-law, anybody, yourself. It's more about trying to avoid the evil that is present within humanity itself. That's my interpretation of it.
In your book, you have a section about Hitler and the Nazis, and by almost by pretty much any standard, they would be considered evil. But there's also a satanic element to it, that their fascination with things satanic.
The occult, and... absolutely. Yeah, Hitler was obsessed with the dark arts and the occult and Satanism, and I think anything that represented power. But, you know, like you said, it really is subjective, because to the followers of Hitler, they were on the good side. And those that opposed them, their adversaries, were considered evil. So it shows you how that sort of fine line of subjectivity that occurs when you think about these things or talk about these things, because, again, like Larry said earlier in the evening, what's, you know, what's evil to one person is not to another. It's the complete opposite. But I think a lot of people that are in very powerful positions, we hear about secret societies and how a lot of the most powerful politicians and bankers and corporate executives belong to these sort of, you know, satanic or secret societies. And I think it goes with that lust for power that is associated with evil.
You know, we talked about exorcisms and the church authorizing more exorcists, and, you know, the idea that it's been portrayed in movies and TV shows and books so often, the cultural influence could be stimulating some of it.
Right.
However, yeah, there are some pretty compelling cases that you detail in the book of exorcisms that seem to have been warranted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some pretty, you know, especially the Robert Doe, I think it is, that supposed to be the exorcist movie case. Absolutely terrifying. But again, are we talking about a child that was really, or you know, an adult that was upset, that was possessed by an actual demon, an ugly, you know, born in hell demon, or was that person manifesting some kind of physical, external, like a poltergeist activity, and yet the only thing demonic is what was going on within that person?
We're talking with Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman about their book on demons and the devil. When we come back, we'll get to the phone lines again. A lot of folks hanging on with questions and comments. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM. I haven't had a chance to make a couple of announcements. So the first one, kind of sad, Paul Von Ward, who had been our guest on the program many times, I think I interviewed him twice, talking about reincarnation and past lives, passed on himself. The memorial services were held earlier this month for Paul Von Ward, and we'll certainly miss him here at Coast to Coast. We'll be back in a moment with more of your calls and questions and comments for our guests, Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman, talking about their book, Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels, in our final segment of Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We'll go back to the phones on the wildcard line. Rod in Oklahoma City. Hey, Rod, how you doing?
Hey, George, how are you doing? Love the show.
Thanks. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering if Marie and Larry had ever heard of CERN and the D-Wave computer, what the Superhydra Collider and the D-Wave computer, they're openly trying to get the key to open the bottomless pit. There's a lot of satanic symbolism with CERN, and they're responsible for the Mandela effect. I can give you a really good example real quick, and then I'll hang up on the Mandela effect that I think everyone can agree with.
Okay.
And I Love Lucy, Ricky Ricardo always, when she got in mixed up, always said, "You got some splaining to do." In this reality, she's never said that. Are you familiar with the Mandela effect?
Sure. We saw a great episode about from the X-Files this past week about the Mandela effect.
Oh, I missed that. I gotta look that up.
Yeah, it was a good one. Marie, you want to tackle this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much aware of what goes on at CERN, at the Particle Collider, and at their attempts to find the God particle and create a possible miniature black hole and look for parallel universes and look for proof of alternate spatial dimensions. Personally, I am the daughter of a scientist. My father was a geophysicist. I love science. I love anything having to do with science. I don't have any negative connotations when it comes to CERN, but I have heard the conspiracy theories, and, you know, they're a little scary. Do I believe in them? I don't know. I don't think so. I think it is perfectly possible that CERN, everything they're doing is just to advanced scientific knowledge. However, I mean, I'm not going to entirely rule out that they're, you know, they're a bunch of Satan worshipers, but I don't think so. I mean, again, coming from a scientific father and growing up in a scientific household, I love that kind of stuff. I follow it. I read about it. I research it. Larry?
No, I completely agree. You know, I have spoken extensively about the work that's being done at CERN, and to my knowledge, and again, I am very familiar with what they're attempting to do, what they have done. I am not aware of any type of demonic backstory there. I mean, there's no alternate agenda that I'm aware of. Now, again, like Murray, I'm not going to rule anything out. I mean, but, you know, based on what I know, I think it's very, very, very unlikely that is a part of that project.
And by the way, I remember it, Rod. I remember it as the way you do. So I'm not sure the Mandela effect is totally in effect here. It's Lucy, you got a lot of splaining to do, right? That's the line. Anyway, thanks for the call. We go east of the Rockies to Joe in New York. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Larry. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
Questions. One would be, now if you look at Olympians that were surveyed and asked if they would take a pill or something to that effect that would cut years off their lives in exchange for the extra ability to win the gold medal, some said yes. So that brings about suspicions that people would, to an extent, make a deal with the devil for a given goal. You know, like that play with the Yankees, you know, winning the pennant for their souls or something. And my second question would be about Marie bringing up wildness. And I remember watching extreme surfing, and these people were on 30-foot waves curling towards a jetty in the Rockaways. And to me, like, wildness is also potentially an unchecked impulse and a mentality rather than something intrinsically evil. It's just people should leave things alone. They're out for an adrenaline rush, and they don't they'll pass go for that.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So I don't know if either of you want to comment on Joe's two points or You have a whole section in the book about selling your soul and people who make deals with the devil.
Because, Joe, I think a lot of people would sell their soul to the devil. We're such a materialistic, ego-driven species that I think if somebody said, you know, here's $60 million, but I think a lot of people would. And I think that that whole concept is symbolic of how we're tempted by the more base, materialistic aspects to our behavior and personalities. But somebody said to me, here's a pill and I'm going to take your soul, but you can live to be 150 and see your son grow up and get married and be happy. It might be a little tempting, but I would definitely think twice about it and say, no, thank you. I'll die when I'm supposed to die. But I do honestly feel like there are a lot of people out there that would do it without a second thought.
Thanks for the call. Cornelius in Los Angeles is west of the Rockies. He's a minister who's had some experiences he wants to share with us. Hey, Cornelius.
Hi. I'm very much into science to the nth degree. I'm a technorat. I'm a programmer, but I'm also a minister, and I've been in ministry for 40 years, and I've seen paranormal activity of things, objects being moved with no one touching them, with witnesses. All these things that I've seen with witnesses. I've even seen UFOs with witnesses. Black, I don't know who was flying those craft. We saw a black triangle 50 feet above our heads in Los Angeles, and actually in Van Nuys out at 12 o'clock at night. So we've seen a lot of things, but I would say this, that the paranormal things I've seen, again, with witnesses, were undeniable. They were absolutely evil. So I can testify that evil does exist, paranormal activity, ergo entities, unseen entities creating havoc in certain situations. I can verify that this is true. And again, I wasn't by myself. We were with witnesses, and we weren't looking for this stuff. We're not ghost hunters. I'm not into looking for ghosts or looking for demons or looking for devils or anything like that. We don't go out looking for UFOs either. We're not into that. But in the course of being a minister, these things happen. And the greatest evil happens when we have demonic entities possess a person, not in the way that you see in a movie, but possess a person to do things, for instance, like drug addiction I'm not saying all drug addiction is demonic, but I'll say the intent, the forces behind that, causing that person to be addicted to whatever, is demonic. And people who rape and kill children, I truly believe that's demonic activity in that person's life, causing that person to execute those evils upon children and other evils that we see, like you said, the Catholic Church or a church or any religion, causing harm to other people. So I just wanted to say that I am a person who's seen evil manifested, and I can go through examples, but I'm not going to. But I've seen evil manifest, paranormal activity, and some of it on video cameras that we actually videotaped. And again, we are not ghost hunters. We don't look for this. We don't advertise this. We don't make money on this. We don't go on television doing these things. We just try to help people. So I just wanted to say that.
Well, thanks for the call, Cornelius. Comments?
Yeah.
The only comment, I would say write a book, or you sound like you have a fascinating story to tell. And I have one comment, though. I do take very strong issue with the way that a lot of human behavior in terms of killing and murdering and serial killers and child rapists is attributed to the devil or demons, because to me, that is a way of removing responsibility from the humans that that need to be held responsible. So I have a real issue with that. But otherwise, I think it's fascinating. I think it's interesting that you have the ability to look at these things with the sort of the technological scientific background that you have, but also you're sort of riding both sides of the fence, so to speak. And it's very interesting. And I think you should definitely think about writing a book about your experiences.
Appreciate the call. First-time caller Richard in Toronto. Hey, Richard.
Hi, guys. How are you? Good evening. Or good morning, I guess.
Hi.
Well, I just wanted to say I totally agree with the last caller because of my experiences as well. In 2009, myself along with two women were abducted from our backyard in British Columbia in the middle of the day, and everybody in the house actually watched us dematerialize and then went on a big hunt for us. So needless to say, it was, thank God I don't remember what happened, but the point is when I did a lot of research into what it could possibly be, and when it came back for me the two and three other times that it has, you can rebuke it in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, and the thing disappears in an instant. It was the silver orbs, the UFO orbs. Also, I was attacked by a 10-foot shadow demon, December of 2015, okay? Now, this thing was hell incarnated. I don't know where it came from. It appeared out of nowhere on somebody's porch, was jumping up on the roofs, was jumping down. It was black. It had stereotypical devil horns, was 10 feet tall. And it did that mind speak where it was in my brain. I didn't believe in demons. I didn't believe in this kind of crap. And the dogs saw it. The dogs were jumping over each other to get away that I was walking at the time. And the thing that made it go away was I felt a hand on the back of my head. It was the most peace that's ever come across my entire body, voice inside my head. And I saw this shadow entity actually look at the thing. And it said, In my head, the hand, I could tell it was my, guardian angel, and it said, you know what to do. And this thing, I rebuked it in Jesus Christ's name. This thing roared, disappeared in a flash, reappeared in the backyard. I rebuked it again on the blood of Christ and in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, and boom, it disappeared again.
Richard, let me ask you this. You and two other people dematerialized. How long were you gone?
We were gone an hour and 20, between 20 and 30 minutes, because when I went run back in the house, there was only one guy. The guys were all in the house watching poker. And when I ran back in the house, there was one guy, and he was bawling his eyes out. Where were you guys, man? Where were you guys? Everybody's out looking for you. Da, 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 da. So that took a lot of explaining. They thought I had messed off with the girlfriends, and you know what I mean? But they had, the two guys had seen us dematerialize. And, you know, they're trying to convince these guys. It was a whole mess. These guys didn't believe in that. I didn't believe in that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's let our guests reflect on it. I mean, it sort of gets into the gray area. Is it demons? Is it aliens? Because a metallic orb doesn't sound like a typical
alien abduction.
Right.
Yeah. I don't rule anything out, but millions of people have experiences that we can't explain. And I would love to be able to, and I know Larry probably feels the same way, we would love to be able to find a scientific method by which to figure out where this stuff comes from, how it manifests, what it is, what its motives and intentions are. You know, it's fascinating. I mean, I love to hear these kinds of stories, as terrifying as they may be, because it does keep that open door and that open curiosity for me as a researcher.
Appreciate the call, Richard. Try to get one more in the wild card line. Walt in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Walt.
Excuse me. It's great to be on with you once again.
Thank you. We have about 3 minutes left in the program, so better get to it.
I usually say those words to Mr. Norrie. But you're George, too, so why, undoubtedly the researchers, Mary and Larry, have undoubtedly come across this common theme in mythology and religion, the idea of a messiah or a savior who is sent by the Almighty to save mankind. Mm-hmm. So I think it's obvious that that this idea, this macabre idea of suffering and bloodletting and death, paying for the sins of mankind, it's obviously to me it comes from a sadomasochistic aspect of the human psyche. So I think what we have to remember is that when these holy books like the Bible and the others were written, there were no microscopes, there were no telescopes, and most importantly, George, there was no science of psychology. Ancient man really didn't understand the way his mind worked.
Absolutely. I love that, because I think the human mind is the greatest mystery of all. It's the most paranormal thing that we
could
possibly deal with.
Walt, appreciate that call.
Well,
I guess
your authors well.
Thank you. You know, it goes back to sort of the duality that you discussed throughout the book. Is you know, if there's going to be evil and good, they interact. They sort of rely on each other.
Exactly, and they're both a part of our human experience, and we can't rule out the fact that we are not projecting all of this into our external environment.
I also, we didn't get a chance to get into it, but the cultural influence stuff, you mentioned, for example, the satanic panic and how cultural kind of influences manifest themselves and spread. These messages spread like wildfire sometimes.
They go viral, and that was even before Facebook and Twitter and, you know, social networking. Now these concepts, even before somebody can prove that there's something to them, they're all over the world. They're spread virally within minutes.
Marie Jones, Larry Flaxman, thanks for being with us. I enjoyed the book, Demons, the Devil, and Fallen Angels. A lot of stuff to chew on in there. Thanks for being with us. Hope to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you, George.
Thanks for having us.
All right. And thanks also to my earlier guests, Eric Davis and Dr. Hal Puthoff. Lot to chew on from those guys. Thanks also to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Nathan Staton, Donna Walker, Dan Galanti, our webmaster tonight, Greg Bishop, and our producer, Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. Good night, everyone. I'll be back next month.